This is an MUT Radio podcast.
That was Luis Sogola Seasons. The time is 32 minutes past 10 here on the Tlhanganani Midday Show. And we are coming to you live from the Careers Fair at MET Seme Hall. But right about now, we are joining, we have our guest joining us. Our guest is Deborah Ewing. And Deborah Ewing is a Durban-based writer. She came to South Africa to support democracy education for the first democratic elections. And she was here for 6 months, and then she stayed ever since. So Deborah has authored 12 books, fiction and nonfiction, some with translations into French, Swahili, Amharic, and Zulu. She has edited newspapers and magazines and contributed to chapters in articles, to more than 60 books and journals on social justice. Her poetry is featured in several anthologies. Her main focus is children's participation and inclusion. She has recently co-authored a book to promote positive conversations between children and adults on puberty, and an animated video and storybook to address child abuse. For many years, Deborah has worked with children in Msinga to co-create bilingual books on animal and human health. So, she also writes audio descriptions. This is really interesting. Everything's really interesting, but she writes audio descriptions to make films, TV, and other visual content accessible to blind people. So today, Deborah Ewing is joining us. We're going to talk about all of her work, everything that goes into writing and creating and storytelling, and how that can translate into opportunities for young people, and what it's like to see yourself in stories and the power of something that would be seemingly simple as a storybook translated into your language. So, yeah, welcome, Deborah. How are you?
Hi, Kanyume. I'm very well. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. So, yeah, we'll jump right into it. Can you tell us a bit about your journey from supporting democracy education to becoming a prolific writer in South Africa?
Yeah, I can do that. So I was working as a journalist in London for several years and was part of the anti-apartheid movement and came over on an undercover assignment in 19-something-something. And then came back, as you said, to work on democracy education. So really media and advocacy to get all the information about the first democratic elections that were coming up. It was a lot of political education at that time, it being the first elections. And then after that, there was a lot of focus, you know, on reconstruction, on rebuilding, reconciliation. And so I got involved in media looking at the impacts of violence on children, but also what do we do about it? So working, doing a magazine and writing, working with children to look at how do we use storytelling and media to address a lot of the damage that has been done. So
yes,
yeah,
yeah. And then I'll jump right straight into your work in Umsinga, because we're talking about this the idea that the way stories and media can help children to see different futures for themselves.
Yes. Right?
And your work, so your work in Msinga does a lot of that. So can you talk a bit more about that journey and that whole experience?
There's a wonderful organization that I work with called Umduketshani in Msinga, and they do animal health extension, promotion, all sorts of rural development work. And in those communities, the role of children in caring for livestock is very important. It's very valued locally, but of course, caring for livestock and being involved in work in the household is time consuming, and it has an impact on children's attending school, but you know, arriving on time, having time to do their homework, and there was a stigma around being involved in agricultural work and livestock care. So this program was looking at how do we affirm children's knowledge. You know, it's really important to know how to look after animals if you depend on them, what you can use animals for, how do you maintain a healthy environment. And children own a lot of that knowledge, but it isn't recognized. So the project was to co-create books with the children that that harvested that knowledge in ways that they spoke, in what they observed. And then we put together story and picture books where the children told their stories, and then we edited it. We had it translated it from Zulu into English, back into Zulu, so that everyone could check it, and the children then could confirm that, yes, this is what our lives are like. This is what we learn. This is what we need to do. And it opens out, you know, the possibilities of using that kind of knowledge, both to improve communication skills, to look at opportunities for further study for people who wanted to go into agric or into natural sciences.
And it's we were talking about how it's really important that people, children or young people, adults as well, see themselves reflected in stories, right? So it's really important that in this case, the children are saying, yes, you know, these are stories that I've experienced, or these are things that I
absolutely am familiar with. And in fact, the children were the actors for the photos. So it's children from those communities that acted as the characters in the story. And the children would direct the story and say, you know, this has happened. There was this crisis, you know, with the crops failing or goats getting into the fields. This is what we need to do about it. So we would pull in all the events that were happening over the year into the story. It is also, I think you're talking about careers today. You're at the careers expo,
yes.
I believe. So this was a great illustration also of the vast range of careers, or, you know, opportunities that can support different sectors. So whether it's, you know, veterinary services, which people in the project are also trained to do, or preparing food blocks, or building new designs of chicken nests, etc. You know, all sorts of practical skills and conceptual skills of problem solving.
Yes. And what is the difference between the way you approached it with the storytelling, pictures? What's the difference between approaching it like that and the way that we do it in conventional school systems with textbooks and that kind of approach to education?
Yeah, I think this is obviously a generalization, and that there are people challenging in doing very creative work around. But yes, we do have a tendency to teach by telling, which it's, you know, it's proven internationally, historically. Most of us know that isn't the most effective way. So showing is a bit more effective. Doing is even more effective. You know, so working with people from what they know and doing things in a practical way. So I'm a writer. That doesn't mean there's no place for writing, but let's just turn it around so that we're writing based on experience and then linking theory to that experience so that it's relevant to people and not intimidating.
Yes. And obviously opportunities are only valuable if they are accessible, right? So
yes.
A lot of, you also work with Shazison and doing audio descriptions for movies and television, for visual communication. How did you get involved in that? And how does that play into accessibility conversations?
Audio description is a recognized art form and an access tool. And I think most of your listeners who have accessed any of the, you know, the main streaming channels for movies, if they look for subtitles or they, you know, look for captions in different languages, they might see the symbol AD, and that means audio description. So increasingly, tracks are available where you can listen through your headphones to a description of what is happening on screen. So very similar to radio commentary in one sense, where, for example, in a sports match, somebody, a commentator would be telling the radio audience who cannot see what is happening, what is going on in the field. So in a similar way, audio description gives you a mental picture of what is happening, whether it's in a photo, whether it's in a film, a TV series, on a website, an exhibition, a piece of theater, or dance. So it's making the visual world accessible to people who have visual impairments or difficulties concentrating, and that is a large number of people, and you know, children included, who are currently excluded. So it's, you know, audio description, it's writing, it's voicing, and I think for your listeners also, it's a whole new field of potential careers.
Yes.
Related to the movie industry, related to education. You know, textbooks have graphics and photos and images that make science and maths in particular very hard for children with vision impairments to access. So audio description addresses that too.
Yes. And obviously, you know, you use all of your writing and creative background and natural talent to create those descriptions. So that also gives you a lot of power into how people on screen or places on screen are represented to people who can't see them, or who, like you said, the attention concentration issues, stuff like that. So how do you address the power that you have with in terms of representation?
That is such an important question, I think, not just in relation to audio description, but media in general. You know, people have platforms, have power, and that ought to come with great responsibility. In the case of Shazacin and the audio description, we have a diverse team that includes people across generations, you know, early career people coming out of film school, educators, people like Shakila Maharaj, the executive director, who is a blind professional who introduced audio description to South Africa. We have blind sound editors. We have people, quite a few first language Zulu speakers on our team in KZN, so that whenever we're putting together an audio description track, say for a movie, Shazacin has done the first AD in Zulu. So the team there were young Zulu speakers who then engaged with other members of the team, different disciplines, and especially with the blind verifiers, to write a track and to check that it was meaningful to a blind person. So we learn a lot from the audience and from blind colleagues telling us what it is they need to know, so that the audio description isn't about what I see as a sighted person. It's about what does the blind viewer need to see in order both to understand and enjoy the visual content.
Yes, and I think that's really interesting work, but also really important to point out that any kind of visual impairments, hearing impairments, any kind of perceived disability, well, doesn't necessarily hinder you into getting into the industry that you want to get into, right?
No, I think that what hinders you are the social barriers, you know? The just as we talk about, you know, systemic and structural racism and sexism, the same with ableism, the assumption that because a world, a society, a company operates in a certain way, everyone must fit into that because that's the only way it can operate. It's the best way it can operate because it's always been done like that. Whereas a lot of the barriers to access for blind people are simply, you know, they're being overlooked in design. They're not being consulted. So a lot of things, both in the physical environment, but also in the technical environment, can be changed. Those barriers can be removed, so that everybody is able to function to their full potential, realize their full potential, realize their dreams. And technology, you know, particularly smartphones, which have great accessibility features. And the fact that now we live in a very visual world, most of the media that we consume, you know, is visual, and it's short and sharp, you know, the TikTok and the other kind of, the short video clips that we watch. So really important to make those accessible through image description and through, audio description so that everyone can participate.
Yes. Now, I'm not going to let you go just yet, but before I do, you've got such an extensive portfolio of work, of your written work, your poetry, your stories, you've got so much work. So I'd love to sit and chat about all of it, but where could our listeners access some of your work?
Okay, so you can find me on social media. I put some of my poetry on Instagram, which is all lowercase Ewing underscore Deborah. So that's Ewing underscore Deborah. I'm on Facebook. I think not so many younger people are there. You can find me on YouTube, Shoreline Poetry. And if you Google, you can find the books. I should have a new website going live next week or the week after. When I get off the call, have we got a moment?
Yes.
Okay. So when I finish this call, I'm going back to do a final proof on such an exciting project I'm working on that I think really encapsulates some of the things that we have spoken about and your focus on careers and Africa and young people, et cetera, at the moment. And it's the launch of an animated video series and a storybook called A Corner's Journey. And I'll send you links for that sometime later. But this is a story set in Nyanga in Cape Town. And if anyone looks up Nyanga or looks for the latest news on Nyanga, the chances are you're going to find something about taxi killings or assassinations or, you know, violence and crime. And this story that I've worked on with a team from a project in Nyanga is looking at some of these really difficult issues like gangsterism and shootings and child abuse, and taking the real stories and working with young people who run a project in Nyanga to say, how do we turn this around? How do we capture the stories of these real, you know, in this case, a young girl, and reflect honestly what has happened to her, and then see who failed, who protected, who stepped in, what can we do? And then make that the focus, you know? So it's an intergenerational project. It involves a very big team, you know, of people with different skills. And I think it's a great example of how we have a solution-focused approach, and we see working with people in different generations and from different cultures and different linguistic groups as an immense honor and an opportunity to fix some of the things that that drive us nuts, you know, in South Africa.
Yeah, so we will watch the space and we'll have you back when you've launched and published.
Great, thank you.
Yes, so I've got two more questions here before I let you go. I just want to know what advice you might have for young people who want to go into writing, audio descriptions, any of your vast experience of your vast career paths that you've had in your past lives and your current lives, and yeah, any advice you have.
Okay, so if you want to go, this is going to sound trite, but if you want to go into writing, write. It's practice whatever your skill is, practice it, rehearse it, you know, be self-critical, not self-condemning, self-critical, and share and be aware of what is going on out there. What are other people doing? Where is the innovation? Where are the opportunities? So in my own practice, I tend to write alone, you know, I kind of withdraw and I write, but then I need to get out there and share with people and reflect. So I think the young people themselves are much more aware of the ways in which the world is changing and how old ways don't work. But storytelling is always relevant. So know your story, tell your story and listen.
Thank you very much. And then one more thing before I let you go. Could you share with us a snippet from one of your stories or one of your recent poems? Anything you'd like to share with us in the last few moments?
Okay. So I think we've talked in a very positive way. I've got a poem I'd like to share, which is a bit dark and serious. But it's really, I think we've got elections coming up. A lot of your listeners are going to be voting for the first time or maybe considering not voting for the first time. So I want to, can I share something called Whistleblower, which is about where we find ourselves and the importance of us being part of solutions.
Yes, please, so, go ahead.
Thank you. Whistleblower. Today we pay our own assassins. By the bullets that seal lips and steal memory, drowning sounds of mourning as howling politicians hurl prayers to personal gods, braying, baying for blood to rewrite lies in lost lives, stitching time to bind gaping wounds, hitching our minds to history's tow bar, slow drag down the dirty streets of that dream deferred.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. And if you want to hear more of Deborah Ewing's poetry or you want to get into some of her books, her stories, if you just want to learn more about her, she is on all social media platforms. She's on Instagram and Facebook. That's EWING_DEBORAH. And she's talking to us today about the power of storytelling, the power of media, and the role that writers and people in those positions of power have in how we see each other and how other people perceive us. And so thank you very much.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.